Good evening, Local 304, particularly my branch, Columbus, Ohio, and good evening to any other mail handler who hears this podcast. What I'm going to do in the next 15 minutes is give you a quick summary from my perspective of what I was paraded through today. Today was the first day of what's going to be at least four separate meetings I'm going to have to answer to, because I've been charged by Local 304 officers and a member for violating what I consider an unconstitutional letter of suspension given to me by local president of Local 304. Before we get started, I want to make it clear to the podcast audience and to anyone else who hears this podcast that I made it crystal clear that because I have charges pending at the national level against the local trial board of Local 304, I don't see how they are even able to hold a trial and be in judgment of me when I have charges pending against them. But it was decided at a national level that they will hear this, so I had to appear. But it was under duress, and I still maintain that the Local 304 trial board is in no position to make a decision against Kenny Hodge when I have pending charges on them. Let's talk about the summary of actions that took place today. Well, to start off, I've never been charged on a union level where I had to appear before a union trial board. But my first question to the board was, is there a recorder, and can I get a transcript of what's going to transpire here today? I was informed that no, that's not a part of this type of trial. And then I asked, could I record it myself? And I was instructed that if I recorded it, then I would have to provide a copy of what I recorded to the person bringing the charges and the entire trial board, which I thought was just a little different. But again, I've never been involved in a trial, and so maybe Local 304 runs their trial board a little different. But I would think that if it is a trial, then you have to prepare for it like a trial, and one of the key ingredients will be a stenographer or court reporter, whether it's a union person or not, because it was all union individuals in the room today. But it has to be some type of record other than people taking notes. Now, again, I must admit, I attempted to record it on my phone, but my phone was acting up and I couldn't get a full recording. But what I did record, I shared with the person bringing the charges and I shared with the local board. But I maintain they should have had a recorder there, because if you are putting me on trial, then we're going to need to have some kind of transcript to prove what was said, because if one member of the board heard it wrong, they're going to convince the rest of the board of what they heard, as opposed to let's all read it so it's public knowledge for everyone to see and make an opinion on. So that's what the trial got started with, and then we moved from there. The charges that I was addressing today pretty much breaks down into I was accused of having or holding a step three grievance. And here we go again with the Hodge to Hodge podcast. They are still maintaining that the podcast and newsletter are one. They are the same thing. And because I was instructed to stop or discontinue my newsletter, that same instructions carries over to I should never have a podcast. And I'm going to explain to you, just like I explained to the board today, my podcast did not come as a result of discontinuing the newsletter. My podcast did not even start off as a postal podcast. My podcast started off as a comedic podcast. That didn't go so well. So I turned and said, well, if I have this airtime, What is it that I can speak about that I consider myself to be somewhat of a subject matter expert on? And the post office came up, and then I began my postal podcast. I explained to the board that that's not all Hodge to Hodge on Blog Talk Radio is a postal podcast. I have many different podcasts. On Sunday and Thursday, I do a podcast called The Messenger. On Wednesday night, I do an urban podcast called The Attic. Last week, we interviewed a psychic medium. So as you can see, my podcast is not a replacement to the newsletter. But I got to be honest with you, I don't believe they understood that. Again, because I believe they really were not sent there to hold a trial. They were really sent there to get the conviction they want. So hopefully that conviction will roll over into me not being allowed to be on the ballot. See, I believe that's the real reason we met today. But I'll continue with my summary. The other main issue that we addressed today was the steward out of Columbus, Ohio, brought charges against me stating I held a Step 3 grievance. Now, again, anybody who knows anything about the grievance procedure knows that that is pretty much impossible to take place. But nonetheless, the local trial board entertained that like it was big news, like it was something important, and they got to know that it really can't take place. And when I say it can't take place, how many branch presidents do you know hold Step 3 grievances? I'm just going to ask that question, and we'll make it rhetorical for the sake of this podcast. I have a signed document in EEO settlement form. See, that's the title of the form. I signed as an EEO representative. Alan signed, and the management representative signed. Because there was a line inside the body of that form that said signing of this EEO, you waive all rights to any other grievances, et cetera, et cetera. Well, let me explain that to you and tell me, does this make sense to you? It was an EEO meeting that we held to arrive at this settlement. And just so I'm crystal clear, we held a redress. We did not reach an agreement in the redress. And the next day, the Postal Service contacted me as an EEO representative and made a counteroffer to what we could not agree on the previous day. So as the board so eloquently pointed out, it was not the day of the redress that this EEO agreement was reached. It was the next day. Now, when the management rep came to me with the offer, again, I immediately contacted my client, the individual, the mail handler I'm representing, and we talked about the offer. When we met with management that same day, there was a grievance number on top of the form. And I explained to the management rep at that point, I do not represent or I have no authority when it comes to union matters right now as a part of my suspension. Again, if you look at the form, you'll see where all these union numbers are crossed out. Myself, the individual I'm representing, and the management representative initialed the form, so we all verified that it was altered before it was signed. Now, again, we made very sure that this should not be misconstrued with anything that the local 304 had in works as far as grievances go. We were very certain about that. I also produced, now again, but that doesn't matter because the form we signed, it did have that line in there that you waive any other grievances. But let me say, this is what I tried to explain to the committee. Once a grievance goes past step two, the union owns it. I don't speak for the union. So when I signed that form, although I seen that in the form, I knew that that was not applicable to this situation. Now, So we've got an EEO document. We've got my signature as an EEO representative. But the trial board seems to be real comfortable with the position, and I say seems to be, that because that line was in the body of the EEO settlement, they are charging me with holding or attempting to hold or signing off on a Step 3 grievance. But then there was a twist. The twist was the Columbus, Ohio steward who bought the charges, I guess, inadvertently slipped up and said he believes. And again, I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth. He believes that the union was withdrew by the Tour 2 chief steward. Yeah, that's what he believes. But again, the board don't want to accept that when I bring it up, but they accepted it when the person bringing charges against me brought it up. So I'm simply saying, here's the witch hunt. If there is a document in question that may be questionable, I mean, it is apparent that great stakes were gone through to make sure that this EEO settlement was not confused with a grievance agreement. And when I say great stakes have gone through, that's why the numbers were crossed out in an issue. Now, that statement in there about the grievances, again, we can go on record saying, okay, that's kind of ambiguous. But the trial board is saying, because, and again, and I'm saying they're saying, just based on the questions, the barrage of questions that came to me based on that one statement inside the body of an EEO settlement. Did I also let you know that I have an email from the management representative who emphatically states that I made it clear that I don't represent mail handlers in this venue. I'm here as an EEO representative. I have no voice when it comes to the grievance procedure right now. See, I've got an email from the management representative, but the trial board hung on to the fact that because the statement was in the body that the individual waives any grievances, they want to hold on to that for dear life. Even though it was stated by the Tour 1 chief steward in Columbus, Ohio, that the Tour 2 chief steward, acting president, I don't even want to call him that because that's really not a position. That's a position made up by your local president. But the Tour 2 chief steward signed off to withdraw the grievance. Now, let's make a long story short. If the form itself is ambiguous, well, I won't even say ambiguous. Let's just say it leaves room for a little interpretation. But the union signed off to withdraw the grievance. Where do you even find the decency or the moral compass to charge me with holding a Step 3 grievance? See, this is what I don't understand. And the fact that I had to go in front of a trial board to explain that, probably to no avail, lets me know that the process is probably going to go the way they decided it would go last week. I got to share this with you. And once I share this, you'll understand why I'm beginning to understand that Local 304 Trial Board has no right or authority to hear my issue. Here we go. One of the questions that was asked to me was, why am I so hard on the branch of which I was elected but not allowed to lead? And my response was, you might want to call it tough love. And I was asked, well, if it's tough, why tough love? And I responded, the branch in Columbus, Ohio, I think, falls short way too often for the membership. I said, the stewards get paid to represent members. And this is where the twist comes in. One of the members of the board said to me, well, stewards don't get paid. I said, I'm pretty sure they do. And then he took a second and he said, they don't get paid, they get a stipend. Did you hear what I just said to you? They don't get paid, they get a stipend. Now, for that member of the board, I'm going to share something with you that may be very important to you, and that is the definition of the word stipend. A stipend, by definition, is a fixed regular sum paid as a salary or allowance. Now, you might ask why I think that is so important. Well, let me tell you something. If we have an individual on the board, influencing the board, and you don't think that stewards get paid, but they get a stipend, if you can't differentiate between getting paid and a stipend, how can you possibly differentiate between a podcast and a newsletter? How can you possibly differentiate between signing an EEO settlement, but somebody's trying to call it a step three decision? And this was the executive board sent to judge me. I'll talk to you tomorrow evening. Have a nice evening.